Hello and welcome to episode 30. Feels like a milestone, Kieran. How are you today?
I'm very good. How are you?
I'm very, very well. And that's episode 30 of the Back to Front show, in case you're a first-time listener.
Uh-huh.
Do you think we get first-time listeners?
The big 3-0. Yeah, of course you get first-time listeners.
Do you reckon?
In fact, aren't all of our listeners first-time listeners?
Well, at one point, of course. You sound very jovial today, unlike before I hit record.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Issues, mate. Issues.
Yeah, I've got issues. But it's all good. Legacy code, you know.
Legacy code, yes.
All good.
Absolutely.
Fun.
Absolutely. I feel like we should once again make an apology at the beginning of the show. I know.
We are turning into teenage bloggers.
We are. Are we? Why?
No. Always apologising at the beginning of the blog post about being...
Do you spend a lot of time watching teenagers on YouTube then, or...?
No. No. Okay. Though, having worked for an internet service provider, there have been a lot of teenage blogs gone past my eyes in my time.
But surely when you were working for an internet service provider, the blog hadn't even been invented.
Oh, it had.
Really? What was it?
Yeah, what was that service called? There was like something diary?
Oh, no, I was thinking of TypePad, no. Movable Type, no.
No.
You'd like Movable Type. That was written
this
in
This is sort of pre MySpace, when people could... There was Live Journal.
Live Journal, that was it?
Yeah.
Who did that? Wasn't that... Was that Dave Weiner, the guy who invented RSS? Did he do Live Journal? Was that his thing?
Not sure.
Couldn't tell you.
I know it was quite goth heavy.
Was it?
Yeah.
Was there lots of cosplay?
Not really the same world there, kid, but...
Oh.
You know.
Okay. Mm. Anyway, yes, we should once again apologise to Mr. Neil Kanish.
Oh, right.
Because his lawyers have been in touch. He's lawyered up.
Uh-huh.
And said that if we have any more defamation of character... / character assassinations on the show, they'll be round knocking on your door.
Yep, signed the Internet Overlord.
But so we can only apologise.
Yep, there'll be no more references to Mr. Kanish.
But the good news is that his internet is so poor in the part of the UK that he lives in, he can't actually download a full podcast. So,
well, there you are then.
He probably didn't hear
what we like.
Probably didn't hear the banter at the end of the last episode anyway, so it's all good. But other big news, and again, I almost feel like it should be another apology. The microphone issue at the end of episode 29,
I was going to admit that was my fault then, but actually I feel it was manufacturer problems. The USB cable falls out of my mic.
Yeah, and as you will see, hopefully by the hero image accompanying episode 30... you've done a stand-up proper job.
I have. It's gaffer tape to the max.
Yeah. Oh, and by the way, did you know, I thought of you the other day, I was in the local Tesco Express.
Oh, thanks.
There is an ale called Proper Job.
Proper Job?
Yeah.
Yes. Is that Badger Brewery?
I think it might be from the Badger.
Right.
Might be from the Badger, but yes, the gaffer tape in full effect.
Mm-hmm.
You're not actually ever going to be able to sell that on eBay, because that stickiness is never going to come off.
Well, it's not mine anyway, it's yours.
Okay, I'll never be able to sell it on eBay. But hopefully you are going to order the boom, aren't you? So that all this in and out business where you were kind of waft out on the microphone.
Is that so I can waft the mic with me as I move?
No. The idea is that you stay a consistent distance from the microphone. Clarity.
But no, I'm too sort of jumpy for that.
And you with a media degree, honestly. Shocking.
Got a media degree.
I thought you got a media degree.
You've got a media degree, haven't you?
Partially. Joint honours.
Joint honours.
Yeah, whatever that means. It got me far. Yeah. Anyway, this week it's our discussion show. I almost couldn't say that.
Yes.
I almost had a slip of the tongue like you did the other week.
I don't know what you mean.
It was all a bit unnecessary.
Yeah.
But yes, episode 30. And you've given it a title in the show notes.
Yes.
Actually, you've, just for the record, Kieran has done the show notes this week.
Way.
They're quite short.
They're a bit half-baked.
Yeah, well, I'd say they've kind of got within 2 foot of the oven, not even half-baked.
Well, but, come on. I'm coming up with ideas. I'm contributing.
I suppose 1 out of 30. We're doing fractions at the moment with my 7-year-old daughter. I'm not sure what 1/30th is as a fraction. I don't know. Anyway, answers on a metaphorical postcard,
metaphorical
please.
Metaphorical postcard.
So yeah, this week, as we committed to on episode 29, we are talking about free.
Mm-hmm. Free.
Free. The notion of free, everything free. Why are why does everyone insist that everything should be free and stuff like that? But we have a few other ideas, but why don't you start, Kieran?
Well, my original, people who follow me on Twitter, all three of you.
It's a bit more than that now, isn't it?
Four or five.
Mm.
Might have seen a recurring rant that I have.
Is it a rant, really?
It is a rant, and I'm going to try and stay clear of rant territory in this podcast. Mm. A recurring rant about the sense of entitlement that the web stroke tech industry seems to have when it comes to products, tools, services they use every day.
Yes, exactly. So we've had many again, I'm doing the bunny ears, the air quotes, whatever you like to call them. Conversation
yes.
about this over the years, haven't we?
Yes.
And we thought we'd put our thoughts down in this podcast. Mm-hmm. And I think we kind of agree on a lot of this, but let's give some of the background. So, I mean, why don't we start by going back a little bit? I mean, and you are considerably younger than me, but I grew up, you know, using computers, and this notion of sort of free software and the free software movement didn't really exist. You know, you bought a box, it had some floppy disks in it, probably 5 1/4, 3 1/2, whatever they became to be.
Or a tape, in my case.
Yeah. And, you know, you paid your money, you got your goods. Mm-hmm. But I think that the open source and free software movement is great, but also feel that it's maybe caused a problem in that people don't like paying or expected that software should be free, especially online services and especially with freemium models. So all that kind of stuff where you get some for free, but then, join beta periods where it's trial, but then if you turn on monetization, suddenly everyone's up in arms. So these are the kind of themes that we're hopefully going to sort of bash out over the next sort of 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it goes beyond the idea of beyond the idea of paying for software and more into the realms of, you know, an attitude that has developed about, you know, X or Y should be free.
Yeah.
You know, I hate to go back to my students when I was teaching, but, I had conversations with my students about, you know, software products and, social networks and those kind of things. And very much the attitude was from people of about the age of 20 was that, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, etc. should be free.
And what was their argument for that? And did they have one?
No, not really. There's just no way that anyone would pay for that, quote unquote.
And these are services everybody uses every day. But the flip side of this as well, which I find really interesting, is that whenever you get advertising thrown into the mix, which is the traditional way of funding services that are technically free, you know, television ads,
radio.
This is not a new thing.
No.
The internet generation don't like being sold to either. So,
no.
You know, you put someone from a tech company up on stage at a conference, they get booed, they get hissed metaphorically, they get shot down on Twitter, even if they're actually talking about a service that most people either use or a product that people use, such as Photoshop, that, you know, they're there to tell you about all the new features.
And more to the point, they've made the conference possible.
Yeah.
That's the interesting thing.
Where do you think this disconnect between financing things and advertising and sort of expectation of free has come from? Any thoughts?
I don't know. I think it's hard. There's not just one answer to that question.
Well, give me a few.
Well, I think open source is part of that. I think there is an element of feeling that, you know, this started around the sort of time that I started building stuff for the web. You know, why should we use Dreamweaver, let's say, when Hotdog, which was a HTML editor at the time, is free or was very cheap. I can't remember. But, why should we use that when text wranglers free, or you know, for that matter, Notepad, which is what I started in, is free. And that's the first time that I came into contact with that kind of vibe. You know, people saying, "Well, I use Vi because it's you know, it's free. Why would anyone use anything else?"
Yeah.
And my answer to that was often, "Well, it saves me time, or it's a nicer experience, or they provide really good support, or whatever the case may be." And that didn't always hold true in the days of enterprise software. You know, see Adobe for details. You paid a lot of money for software and you didn't actually get very good support, and it wasn't very reliable. And, you know, Photoshop did quit unexpectedly. So I think that there's a sort of attitude arose then about we're being charged a lot of money for products that aren't actually any better than free products. And I never understood this, because I can 100% see why Photoshop is a far nicer product to use than, say, GIMP.
Yeah, for sure.
But equally, that there will be, I'm sure, listeners to this podcast who would tell me that, you know, they've been using GIMP for years and that it is just as usable as Photoshop. You just have to get used to it. That, yes, kind of argument.
Yeah.
So I think that's where a lot of this attitude came from. But I think this has changed slightly with, as you called them, the internet generation, where people who've actually grown up never knowing life without an internet connection see all these free services as a kind of birthright. Again, I don't want to get into ranty territory here, but talking to my students and talking to people who have, you know, I said to you the other day that I was talking to students and they were saying that they can't remember a time when there weren't touch devices.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, that puts it into context. They can't remember a time before broadband. So this means that they have grown up with Gmail. You know, Gmail has always been there. So the idea of paying for email is completely laughable. You know, and I had that conversation with them. I asked students, you know, would you pay for email? And universally the answer was no.
She's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess both of us of an age where you had your ISP and you paid them your money and you got your email via your ISP. You know, this was pre. Yes, you could have a Yahoo account or whatever, but if you wanted, you know, email, you wanted access to the POP and whatever servers, then you could. Oh dear, I'm getting some crackle.
Oh. Surely not the road playing up.
I think it might be. You know, hold on.
Do apologise for this temporary break in service.
Yes, I know. I'm not sure what's going on here. Could be some strangeness. But yeah, so, you know, you paid your money, you got your email, you got your internet access, albeit very, very slow. But again, it's kind of... Oh, and we're back. Sorry about
that.
Yes, I'm not sure quite what happened there. Dodgy microphone issue, some interference, the gremlins.
Mm-hmm. It was pleasant audio for a while there.
It was. It's always good listening to hear people stumble across their words whilst they're trying to work out a technical issue and think at the same time, which, as we all know, is very difficult.
It's pretty much the back to front show.
Well, we have an air of professionalism. But,
yes.
Gaffer tape.
Mics falling apart,
falling cables, everything. It's all, yes. Anyway,
we were saying about the air of entitlement around software, and how we think it had its roots in the open software movement, or the free software movement, freeware as it was called.
And there was shareware as well.
Shareware as well.
Yeah, do you remember that? So it would be kind of you know, a few dollars, all very cheap stuff. I remember some of the early Mac apps were kind of
shareware,
which I never quite understood the ethos behind, but yeah. So I guess if you've grown up where you've had access to all this stuff online for free, you know, YouTube, would you ever pay for a YouTube video, or again things like online services? You know, how many online services are technically free, whether they're ad supported or not? They're technically free, and I think it's caused no end of issues or the implications are that when, you know, you're trying to do an online service, if it's not free, that's somehow a problem if there's not a free plan, you know.
Yeah.
But then when people try out applications and then, you know, they build the user base, there comes a point where they turn on the monetization, which I've always had difficulty saying. And then people say, well, it's not worth $5 a month. It's not worth $1 a month. And yet, maybe if they'd been charging from the beginning, they would have a sustainable business. But
I see both sides of this argument. Not the argument about why people feel entitled to stuff for free, but I see both sides of the argument of, you know, that, you know, how many subscriptions, and we've touched on this before, but how many subscriptions can we sustain each? I think there's very much a feeling of mining the miners right now, where there's a lot of apps aimed at developers and aimed at web startups and the collaboration that's required and remote working and all those things. And in the Silicon Valley gold rush, I think that it just like the real gold rush, it's a case of mining the miners is more lucrative often than mining for the gold yourself.
Right.
And that's why there's a lot of these, you know, apps out there aimed at developers and aimed at the web community. But I think that it's also, I hasten to add, it's not just a case of mining the miners. It's also a case of, you know, developers know themselves better than any other market.
Right.
So they tend to build stuff. You know, DHH is famous. I don't know if it was him or his business partner, but it was, you know, scratch your own itch or whatever. Has come about because I think that very often people look at the things like Facebook and YouTube, etc., and think, well, we're never going to reach that kind of scale. You know, only one person in, you know, 200,000 or one in a million actually ends up becoming Facebook. Whereas, you know, to have a small app that maybe makes me the 50 grand a year or whatever it is that I need to, that I need to pay the bills, or that me and my business partner need to pay the bills, you know, it appears to be less of a challenge, and that's why there's so many of these things around. But I think it equally feeds into why people get frustrated with it, because they feel like, well, I really like this piece of software, but it's yet another monthly subscription.
Yeah, and they do add up, don't they?
They do, and maybe that's the SaaS movement. You know, this is the, you know, software as a service,
yeah,
movement where people are all searching for that app that people will pay monthly for, because that's what provides you with the recurring revenue. Whereas if you build a piece of software, you really have to come out with a new version, you know, every year or something to continue to pay the bills, because otherwise, you know, there's a limited market.
Yeah, I mean, there are some sort of poster pieces of software in a sense. I mean, something like Perch, if you ever follow any of their and Rachel's newsletter and things like that, they built a business on I believe it's a one-time fee for the software.
They have, but I have equally seen people moaning about Perch.
In the respect of having to pay, or?
Yeah.
What's their argument?
Argument is, why don't I just use WordPress, or why don't I just use Jekyll, or why don't I just use anything?
Well, I guess those people can, and the ones that see the value.
But this is part of the thing that I'm trying to get to the bottom of, which is that, you know, how do people demonstrate that value? Because I think a lot of people struggle with this. You know, a lot of people that I talk to have got products like this that maybe are in a space where there is other free stuff, or there's other established stuff, who have different models. Payment, let's say. So maybe you've got a piece of software and there's a competitor who charges one off for the software,
right, yeah,
but you want to charge for a subscription. Or maybe there's a competitor who's got a free plan that competes with your paid plan or whatever, because they're a bigger company. And one of the things that I get asked a lot, you know, just chatting to people who are doing this stuff, is, you know, well, how do we communicate? Or rather, one of the things that I think is the issue when I talk to these people is that they're not communicating why use them,
right?
You know, because I can look at Perch and I can take both angles. I can say, you know, why would I pay for this? It's a PHP blogging platform, well, CMS. stroke, it's got a blog module that you add on, you know.
Yeah.
Why would I not just use WordPress? It's free. It's maintained. It's got a huge community behind it. Yet, clearly, purchase exceeding. So I'd love to know what the secret is there. How are they communicating that? Because that to me seems like an incredibly hard sell. And I seem to remember you and I sitting in the office when Perch first came out, and saying, you know, how is this going to work? You know, no disrespect to Drew, but you know, how is this going to work?
Mm.
You know, it's a CMS. It's just a PHP CMS.
I think their real unique selling point, their USP, is the fact that it's a CMS that you can plug into an existing project, a flat site. So if you've inherited a site and people just want certain editability, that's where I think they probably cornered the market. You know, you've inherited a site, you've got a week to make it because the CEO wants this done and they want to be able to change that every other week. Mm. You can go in really quickly for, you know, a very, very small investment. I mean, it's under $100 easily. And you've got this well-maintained, well-supported piece of software. Now,
and it's loosely coupled, isn't it? That's
yeah,
that's
very
the key,
loosely coupled.
Yeah.
Very loosely coupled. And I think it's the way they've done it is very technically, it's very clever. But they've also done a lot of regular marketing, and they've gone out to events and all that kind of stuff, which is a whole different conversation. But I think they position themselves quite well. They know what they're, you know, they call it a very little CMS or whatever the phrase is. So and there have been occasions when, you know, sometimes when you fire up the WordPress installer, you're like, this is probably overkill for what I need here. It's absolutely ideal for many things, but sometimes you just want to be able to edit a couple of pages, add in a new region and so forth, and have that generate an RSS feed and done. Case in point, the current site for the Back to Front Show, which is in Slim, which is a PHP kind of micro framework. And I just edit it and add some data to an XML file. Really, that's a bit of a pain, but in many ways, it would just have been easy to crank that out in Perch, you know. WordPress was a bit overkill for three pages. At the time, it felt that way. So,
yeah,
in hindsight, maybe now, if I needed to redo that in 2 days, I'd probably buy Perch.
And I suppose it is about, but it is about communicating the things you've just said in a compressed format to people who are initially hitting that page when they come to see the product. Because I think the reason a lot of people kick off about products on Twitter or on Facebook and those kind of places and say, you know, almost there's almost an air of how dare they? They're trying to rip off developers, or they're trying to rip off whoever, you know. I mean, happens in the film world as well, you know. How dare this company do this? They're charging filmmakers.
I mean, surely you can only get ripped off if you spend the money and there are no alternatives. So I think that's kind of a moot point in software, because there are so many alternatives. If you don't want to pay Adobe $50 a month, you don't have to.
Mm.
So I always think the argument of, oh, it's a ripoff. Well, it's only a ripoff if you have no alternative and that's the tool that you need in order to do the job that you're doing.
Whereas, but very often, I think it's that they want that tool. It's not that they need it. It's that they want Adobe Creative Suite. So they... but they don't want to pay for it.
Yeah, I mean, but it's very, very funny, isn't it? When you have something that's like $30 a year, people don't want to spend that either. So no. It's like, where's the value? Why are we, not necessarily us, but people who are building apps, why can't we, or SaaS products, sell the benefits enough that people see it as an absolutely worthwhile investment? I mean, I get this all the time with my work with Shopify. People say, oh, well, it's got a monthly fee. And I'm like, well, yes. You know, if you rent a house, you pay a monthly fee. If you rent a shop, you pay a monthly fee. But the idea is that the money that you generate from that is inordinately more, and the benefit that you derive from that isn't as orders of magnitude greater than the actual cost that you put in. So if you rent a shop for $30 a month but you're taking $3,000, surely that's a good investment. And so with software, I think if you look at it that way, then yes, I'm paying $50 a month, but that allows me to run. And let's face it, most of us have very, very low overheads to run our businesses.
Yeah.
A web design business, you know, I have Adobe Creative Cloud Suite or whatever it's called. cost me $50 a month, but I'm turning over $5,000-$6,000 a month. That is therefore a very, very good investment, albeit over the year a lot of money. But when you factor in the sort of time to learn alternatives, the time to, and maybe this is just a thing with age, you know, you don't have the time or your commitments are greater or whatever, to go out and source the latest and greatest free product. You know that that's going to get the job done. So I'm just going to make, an annual payment. It's like Dropbox. I just pay them because there are probably alternatives and there are probably backup regimens and ways of sharing that I could do, but it just works. And so it's worth paying $100 a year to have that kind of just working.
Yeah, I completely agree. Okay, here's another angle, so we don't get too bogged down in the why is it not free angle, because there's a question beyond this, which is about that sense of entitlement. So the other piece that I find baffling is when people throw their toys out the pram when a service shuts down, or gets bought. I've been sad to see things like Sparrow, for example, get purchased and be mothballed. You know, those are things that are frustrating when you are you're using a product every day, you've paid for it, and that product is then ceases to exist. But this isn't something that, you know, due to the huge amount of choice that we have. And also due to the nature of commerce, this is something new. You know, if you bought a Rover car, for those listeners in the US, that's a British car brand that's now defunct. If you bought a Rover car in 1998 or whatever it was when it shut down, you'd be pretty frustrated. But these things have happened everywhere, but it seems to me that the maybe this is just the increase in communication that we've seen on the web between companies and their customers, but it seems to me that the bile that gets thrown at these companies is disproportionate.
I think you've definitely hit on a good topic there. The Sparrow one was interesting because I thought they had a great product and I was happy to spend, was it $25-$30 or something?
I think it was $20, yeah, something.
And you know, their iOS version was, I still think, probably looking back, even though it probably wouldn't work now, one of the nicest mail clients that I've used on the phone.
Yes.
And I think that's probably an anomaly, because that one got me because they had paid, and we've talked about this before, it did work still, it didn't stop working.
No.
But there's kind of that notion that, well, if they're not going to carry on developing it, but I guess
No one's carrying on developing your car, are they?
Well, I was just about to say the same thing. So it doesn't really work in the same way, does it? You buy a car and it's kind of set in stone, it's canonical. It's like, unless you go and get something amended to it, it's, you know, you get a new tire, a new engine or whatever, it's done.
Yes.
It's bought as seen. Whereas with software, we've got this thing that, even though you're not paying monthly, you bought the thing, so you want the updates. You know, I paid for it, so I want the updates. I want you to keep developing it. I want you to fix all the bugs.
And the analogy with the car is it doesn't completely work in that, you know, a software development company, if they go out of business, or if the product's mothballed, then there's no support, there's no updates, there's no security patches, that kind of thing. Whereas if a car company goes bust, there are likely to still be parts. The parts will be sold to somebody, you know, you've always got your local garage.
True.
Who could do work on the car, whereas you can't, you know, pop down to PC World and ask them to fix a bug with Sparrow. So I can see why there's like that people are frustrated when these things happen, but I guess that it comes back to that sense of entitlement, the sort of the anger that people have when they're and this can be free products as well. You know, I've seen people shut down free services and get the same sort of abuse. Certainly, you know, look at Google Reader.
Yes, true.
You know, this was a free service, albeit ad supported.
Yeah.
That Google did not want to maintain anymore, and it wasn't profitable. And the internet backlash was enormous.
Mm.
Despite the fact that I personally believe that the majority of people who were ranting about this on Twitter were not using Google Reader anymore.
Yes, it does seem disproportionate, some of the outpouring of anger. Mm-hmm. When things shut down. I think if you shut down a service, you do it in the right way. And there's been a lot of articles and a lot of sort of examples of how best to do that.
Yeah,
communicate it and allow people to take their data with them, which I totally understand. You know, mm-hmm. you've been inputting into this network or this tool, and you want to be able to take away the data that you've accumulated, and if there's a way that you can do that that allows you to import it into something else, all the better. But yeah, it does feel that, and people say things like, "Oh, I'll never trust you again if you do this. I'll never, I'll never use your software again." It does seem.
I was about to ask you about that. I was about to ask you if you're using a service and a company shuts down a free service, let's say, and says, or sells that free service, and the company that buy it shut it down, do you automatically think, well, I won't trust that company again? Or do you, think, I mean, that seems to be the general vibe online, but that seems to be one of the trends, is people saying, once bitten.
Yes, I that doesn't really work for me. I think if you're not talking, or even VC venture capitalist backed software houses, they shut things down, they change, they pivot
all the time.
I mean, recently we saw we were chatting very briefly the other day about Rushmore. We've had a lot of mutual acquaintances and friends who worked on that project, mm-hmm. and it was a service sort of focused around music.
And you could say that I worked on that project in that I put a lot of data into it.
Yeah, you did put a lot of data about your 70s hair metal bands and 80s prog rock.
It was Van Morrison. Anyway, carry on.
But I saw it the other day that it's now kind of a video sort of messaging sharing service. And I was like, whoa.
It's a live streaming service, kid.
Okay, well.
It's never been done before, you stream.
No, exactly. So, would I trust? I mean, I trust implicitly the people who did the original version, but obviously it's got passed along the chain and it is now something entirely different, and the name has just carried on. But I think what happens a lot when people get angry about free services shutting down, and then you ask them, well, would you pay for it? And they say no, then I struggle with the disconnect because, well, how do you think it's going to carry on? Mm-hmm. Whilst we have democratized internet technology in the sense of things like DigitalOcean and Amazon and so forth, actually bringing up services. And we talked about this in relation to Digg, going back 5-6 years, Digg was $250,000 a month to service.
It's unthinkable now. Well, not unthinkable, but you'd have to have a pretty big service to be paying that.
Yeah, and now imagine what kind of firepower you could buy for $250,000 a month now. You'd probably it would be insane. So in that sense, it's cheaper, but it's still an awful lot of money. It's still and a lot of these services or products are not venture backed, and people put them out there to try and see if they've got legs, and work hard and are very, very talented, and it must be demoralizing on the one hand for people to turn around and say, well, I'm annoyed at you because it's going, but I'm not going to pay you for it, but you have to carry it on, otherwise I will never trust you again. It just seems a bit I can't join the dots up, put it that way.
Yeah, particularly in a world where we're told, I think it must be very frustrating, particularly in a world where we're told that your network is so valuable. You're told that you need to keep your network on side, and you need to actively build your network and all these things, and that's you can quite clearly see that network effect happening when you watch someone like Kevin Rose, to go back to Digg, or you watch celebrities on Twitter and their ability to change the course of, say, a Kickstarter campaign. So you can very obviously see how that works, and I think that's very frustrating, where maybe you've said to yourself, okay, I'm going to build software for developers, back to mining the miners. So I'm going to build software for developers. You've got a big developer following, you're spending time writing articles for maybe Smashing Magazine, or to increase your profile, And then people start saying that kind of thing to you.
Yeah.
I think I find it particularly frustrating when it's other web people.
Mm.
I'm not sure that's the type of person, but you know what I mean. People who work in the web industry. Saying it to their colleagues, effectively, to their peers. You know, I'm never going to trust you again. Well, surely they, of all people, can put themselves in the position where, you know, maybe you're spending £500, £600, £700, £1,000 a month on hosting and the like, and suddenly you're thinking to yourself, well, either I need to turn on some money here,
mm.
or I need to shut this down. And very often companies are quite open about that. You know, that they have to, in some way, make this work. And that seems to generate just as much hatred as shutting it down or charging for it.
Yeah, as you put in the show notes, though, our hate is just going to hate. And I think there's definitely a situation where people just, maybe they fire off these remarks all too quickly and, you know, they move on to the next thing. But they have a legacy and they have an impact. And I struggle. I mean, the other side of this, just going back slightly, is that with the app store economy, we're very, very used to paying for software. You're very, very used to dropping, you know, $10 or pounds or whatever on apps for your phone. You know, we'll pay for things like Netflix. We don't expect that to be free. You don't expect things like postage to be free, or, you know, Amazon to send you your products free. So I do struggle with why, when it comes to software particularly, or things online, that there is this, again, we probably won't get to the bottom of it in this conversation, but
no.
why should it be free? Why? And the other side of it, again, there's lots of sides going on here. I'm not kind of sure how many edges to this argument we're going to get, but the people who complain are often the ones who have the iPhone 6 Super XY whatever on the day that it comes out. They've got the latest and greatest Mac product. They've got, they're at the bleeding edge of, you know, the developer release of what is it, Mavericks and so forth. So they are spending money. So it doesn't always seem to me that it's a lack of money. It's just that, as you say from the top of the show, this sense of entitlement that these things should be free, but equally you shouldn't advertise to me. So I can't join all the dots up fundamentally.
I think one of the things that just occurred to me as you were talking was that part of this, I find this quite hard to get my head around as well, but part of this is about that people expect that the product that you launch with, you know, you launch a product, you say it's going to cost X, it's going to do Y, and, you know, please sign up. When that changes is when the hatred appears. And I do wonder if this is about the expectations that are set. So, you know, we've talked about before, if you're going to launch a product that's going to be, you know, you have to pay for, then launch it with, you know, with credit card processing and everything built in. Don't launch it free. Just go straight in there and say, you know, you have to pay for it. Because the introduction of that that payment processing is such a huge point of friction and such a pain point for support that, you know, that it's just not worth doing. You might as well wait a few weeks, integrate the payment, and you know, make your decision about how much it's going to be, and off you go. But I almost think that, you know, the nature of the web is that we launch a product, the web is, we launch a product, and it's organic. You have to sort of, you feel out what's working and what's not, and what users are using and what's not. It comes back to that conversation that I had with you about Kickstarter and about how you can't blame Kickstarter because celebrities are using the service.
No, exactly.
You know, you're not in control of how your service ends up being used. You know, yes, you can produce a whole raft of rules around your service and try and curtail usage. But ultimately, you know, just like Twitter, for example, platforms tend to follow how the users want to use it. So there is an element of organic behavior there. And I guess when people don't like change at all anyway, you see it with Facebook when everyone kicks off because they change, you know, a hex color. But they especially don't like change when it where it potentially hits them in the pocket.
Mm.
And so if you say, well, actually, I'm sorry, but, you know, our annual subscription's not working anymore because, you know, we just can't, it's just not break, we're not breaking even on it, so we're going to put that up. People are like, wait a second, I signed up to this at $4 a year or
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's interesting.
Yeah, I just think that there's, I can see both sides, but I really don't understand the hatred and the entitled piece of that puzzle.
No, no, I'm fully in agreement, and I don't think you find it in many other industries. You don't walk into a into a shop and expect things to be free, and I think this is not. Please don't anyone take this away as this is us having a go at kind of open source and free software. Absolutely not. I think that's done wonders for the world, and I'm recording this through Skype and Audacity and Audio Hijack Pro, which I paid for. So yeah, it's enabled us. It's been very democratizing. It's enabled us to do.
I think open source great is stuff. It's a slightly different conversation.
Yeah, absolutely.
We shouldn't draw open source into this.
It may be
one of the factors involved with people's sense of entitlement, but it isn't. It isn't what we're talking about here. It's not that we're frustrated if an open source project changes. It's more that somebody... it's not even big software companies. You know, people always have a go if Adobe changes something, you know, when they introduce subscriptions. But it's more small companies who maybe got a handful of products. You know, I mean, I can think of who are the guys who have like there's an FTP product and Transmit Panic. You know, people of that kind of nature, or Sparrow, or you know, Airmail, or any of these people. They change the way that things are done. They seem to receive a lot of hatred.
Yeah,
and that's. That's unfortunate, I think, because I think that most of us can put ourselves in their shoes and be like, well, actually, if we were, you know, four or five people working in a row on a product and we're trying to make a living from it, we would have to make changes as we learn.
Yeah, exactly. And I think maybe the last sort of decade, 12, 13 years after the first bubble with sort of the rise of VC, and it's just changed the ballpark. You know, people can do all these services that, you know, the ultimate goal is maybe to flip or to float, and they profit, and making money isn't a problem. But then the knock-on effect of that is that when people are great software developers who, you know, want nothing more than to be able to work on a couple of products and pay their bills, it makes life very difficult because people are expecting things to be free. Why would I pay for X when I can do the same thing on Y for free? Mm-hmm. Well, it's better because of X and Y and Z. Yeah, but I can get it for free. So you're going to do it for free? You know, it doesn't... and we know this from conversations with friends who are in this boat as well. It's not unreasonable to charge what they want to charge for their products because it's a thing I use every day and it makes my developing life easier, but people don't want to pay it. And I don't know. But I don't think we'll get to the bottom of it. And we have been trying to for probably since we've known each other, but certainly over the last 40 or so minutes. So, yeah, it'd be interesting to... We don't have comments, but if anyone's got any thoughts on why, they can always drop us an email or tweet us, or find us on the Facebook. Are you on Facebook yet?
No, I haven't signed up yet. No.
Are you on Elo? I bet you've got an Elo invite, haven't you?
No, I think I have got an Elo invite. I don't think I've actually followed through on it.
Oh, you see, you're one of the chosen ones.
Yeah. Well, you know.
Yeah.
I probably filled a box in with an email address at some point.
Probably. Probably, but yes, it's a topic that we often revert back to and have moments of clarity, then lack of clarity and disillusionment and no understanding. But
I think the key from this podcast is to be nice to each other.
It is.
It's not a fight. You know, we're people are building stuff for developers and people are building stuff for the web community that is actually, you know, useful. And yeah, things, you know, change and people realize they actually need to make some money. You know, you need to just accept that. That's the try not to give so much hate online.
The irony, of course, is as soon as you ask anyone to do any design work for free, you you know, lambasted to the hilt, rightly so. Yes, but yeah. Anyways, that's
spec work. Yeah,
that's an episode in the future. But I feel we must apologise for the musical interlude that I will inject into the middle of this podcast, where we marry up the audio. Apologies about that. We're not having a good run with microphones, and our attempt to be more professional has resulted in us being less professional. But
maybe there's a lesson there, Kate.
Maybe there is a lesson that yes. But as always, thanks for listening. We will be back with our Links show, episode 31, next week. We're going to have to record a few back to back because I'm out.
Spoilt the magic.
I know. I'm out and about. So
oot and a boot. Anyway, you can talk about.
Where am I off? The web is going off to the web.
The
is.
Web is. As the I said
web
earlier.
Is. The web is. Yes, and then straight home for a couple of days, and then off to Beyond Tellerrand in Berlin, which is one of my favourite cities. So
lovely.
Very much looking forward to that.
But currywurst.
Yes.
Not for you, obviously.
Well, you say that, but at Smashing Conf, they had a vegetarian currywurst stand.
Really?
Yeah. And the funny story there is that they also did veggie donners, but the German government said they weren't allowed to call it a donner, so they have to call it a tonner. They swapped the D for a T, and they literally crossed it out in ink on their signage and put a T. And Mark Thieler got to the bottom of it and said, yeah, the government were on their case. How dare you call something that isn't pure meat a donner?
An elephant leg.
Yes. So, but fully recommended. Veggie tonner.
Nice.
But it's a meaty country, but I'm sure I'll be fine. But
you'll be fine, yeah.
Anyway, thank you everyone for listening. And I hope you can join us next week. And if you do like what you hear, despite our audio difficulties, please do leave a review on iTunes. There's a link at the bottom of the show notes. Right. I shall get on and find some music for the musical interlude. And I shall speak to you soon, Kieran. Cheers.
Cheers.